Okay, thank you. And I also first want to thank you for inviting me to this conference, because I think it's really interesting, and I've been traveling a lot on this issue, but I always have to present something about the effects of the Norwegian reform, but this time I get a chance to more elaborate on other aspects and I think more basic questions concerning with democratic legitimacy of this kind of policy instruments. So this paper addresses explanations for the ongoing international spread of mandatory gender quotas for corporate boards. And I at least try to have a double approach here. I investigate the role of the Norwegian tradition for applying gender quotas regulations in other domains in relation to the emergence of mandatory gender quotas for corporate boards. And I explore the international spread of gender quotas for corporate boards in relation to the mechanisms put forth in theories of policy diffusion. And finally, I argue that mechanisms of diffusion should be studied as interrelated and a complex phenomenon. First, I want to say just a few words about the Norwegian quota law. It applies for various types of companies. It applies for public limited companies, stock-listed companies mainly, which has been kind of focus of the debate. And it has been it has been working since for new established firms, PLC firms from 2006, and for established firms from 2008. It also applies for intermunicipal companies, state-owned companies, municipal companies, and cooperative companies. There's still the vast majority of small companies in Norway are not, the law does not apply to them. And the formulation of the gender quota ruling in the company legislation is quite detailed. So it depends on the number of persons serving on the board. So the 40% rule is for companies where there are 9 or more members on the board. And the sanction system, which is particular for the Norwegian legislation and which is considered very strong, says that a company that does not have a legal board despite several warnings followed by fines with the possibility of correcting the matter will be subject to forced dissolution. I need to say a couple of words about why they chose this very tough sanction system, and that is because this is the sanction system that applies for all the other rules in company legislation, so or all the other rules connected to the board in company legislation. So I think and I think there was a lot of legal consultancy rounds about what should we do here. And the fine system actually became an opportunity later, because they met the reaction that this was really hard. But they have never been close to any questions of dissolution of a company. All the companies have followed the rules, although there has been some companies that has re-registered. But not among the stock-listed companies. It's among the companies that, for some or other reason, were registered as a public limited company, but had not gone registered on the stock. And then just two figures to show how the proportion of women changed from the debate started, actually at the end of the 1990s. And here you see different types of companies that are applied to the legislation. So it's mostly the PLC companies where there was a very quick rise in the proportion of women. For the state-owned companies, there has been quite good representation of women for many years, and but they have all moved in the direction of about 40% women. And here you see the difference between the large amount of private limited companies that does not apply to the legislation and the public limited companies. So, just very few words about the more kind of theoretical approach I use in the paper. I use the theory or perspective or path dependency as a main approach to explain the emergence of the legislation in Norway. Main claim of path dependency is that prior choices and actions have consequences on future choices and actions. Costs of changing courses increases, and that path-dependent processes embedded in temporal processes interconnected with traditions, norms, and expectations that drive processes in a certain directions. And that will probably be no surprise. It's particularly the strong gender quota policy tradition in Norway, which is this path-dependent see that I describe. Mechanism of diffusion. I mean, this does not cover the whole range of possible mechanisms, but I've just chosen some of them to describe in this paper and actually discuss them later, whether they are relevant for this diffusion process. So I distinguish between constructivism, coercion, competition, and learning, and I will elaborate a little bit more about the content of these diffusion mechanisms later in this presentation. First, this is a kind of mapping about how I understand the policy process or the factors, contextual factors, and other factors that led to the emergence of the Norwegian gender quotas for corporate boards. Most importantly, I think there was the gender quotas on public board, which is regulated through the Gender Equality Act, Article 21 in the Gender Equality Act. In addition, we have electoral quotas for most political parties. So that was an important background. And then there was a very strong debate about women in management in the end of the 1990s in Norway, as I think in most other West European and countries and the US. But then there was strong deregulation policies going on in the end of the 1990s elsewhere, but maybe particularly in Norway because we have a lot of state ownership in business life. And one of the, in fact, unintended consequences of these deregulation policies was that the gender quotas for public boards did not apply for these companies anymore. So that, I mean, big company like Statoil, before they were deregulated, they had to have 40% women on boards. After deregulation, they did not have to have that anymore. So this raised quite strong public debates about what is happening here. In family policy, which has been quite radical with the father's quota in as a part of the paternity leave and parental leave and so on, and they introduced a cash for care reform, and we have this delimiting of the gender equality legislation. So that made a context quite strong criticism on what is happening here. So then, and then there was a large revision of the Gender Equality Act, and it was quite a long political process because even in Norway, where there has been a strong gender quota tradition, it was a lot of opposition against the gender quota for corporate boards. And then came the very famous conservative minister for trade and industry, Ansgar Gabrielsen, who in a way paved the way for the legislation, although it has been really probably prepared by governments before him. So this is how I understand the political process that led to the gender quotas for corporate boards. And then a few words about the ongoing diffusion process. And I think it's sometimes quite difficult to place the different countries according to the reform, because in fact I think at least France should have been among those, also including state-owned companies, because they have I mean, it depends on the number of people employed and so on. So it's it includes more than the PLC companies. But also what's and the new Danish quota law is really quite weak or strange in its formulation, its targets, and it's really quite unclear. But it's a law, and there also may be a kind of relationship between corporate board legislation and electoral quotas, or at least most of the countries that have established corporate board quota legislation also have some kind of electoral quotas. But then again, Denmark is quite strange exception, because they had gender quotas for some of the political parties but have eradicated them, and there's also a very strong opposition in Denmark against gender quotas. I think in the Nordic realm, Denmark is an outlier where there has been always a lot of skepticism to quotas. Also in Sweden, but in a different way. Sweden more finds a way to achieve gender balance without using gender quotas. Yeah, but that's another question. What's happening in Sweden? We could talk about that, but maybe not now. So then I will continue with discussing the possible explanations of the international spread of gender quotas for corporate boards in the light of mechanisms of diffusion. It's a lot of text, sorry, but I mostly made this PowerPoint to structure my own thought. The structivist argument for diffusion can distinguish between here three different mechanisms: follow the leader mechanism, the role of experts, and neighboring countries. And when it comes to the follow the leader, I think that Norway's position as a leading country of gender equality has been quite important in this context. On the one side, we have had these studies that, as for example Ahern and Dittmer, that shows that there's a negative effect and so on. But I think that the fact that Norway has been quite successful in gender equality progress, simultaneously as the financial crisis has at least affected Norwegian economy less than other economies, also makes it difficult to argue that it's really hazardous to establish these kinds of regulations. Spain was the first country to follow Norway, and that was a part of great gender equality reforms in Spain, and it was actually before the financial crisis, and Spain was the only country that adopted this kind of legislation before the financial crisis. While Iceland, on the other hand, which was the second country to adopt this kind of legislation, they came just after the financial crisis, And I think there was a big debate in Iceland about the relationship between male dominance and I think, I mean, Norway is a small country, but Iceland is a much smaller country, and there was a lot of debates about kind of at least very problematic economy on Iceland, and so this crisis in a way paved the way for a lot of gender equality reforms, among them corporate board quotas. In addition, first spread very important for so I think that this first spread was very important for not making this instrument a very particular or distinctive Norwegian reform, but something that could spread further. And then I want to add a few words about the role of experts. Enormous activities on the European arena to learn about the Norwegian experiences, and that's where I, among a lot of other people, have been traveling around and telling about the experiences. And it has been used both in favor and against the gender quotas. Economic performance of companies that we have been dealing with here today, where you find Catalyst on the one side and Hearn and Dittmer on the other side in the use of arguments. And also the debates about the golden skirts have been important in kind of debates about negative effects of the gender quota. And it's quite interesting because the studies that says that now today Norwegian boards are just filled with golden skirts, a few women serving on a lot of boards. What they actually find, and they do kind of network studies, so what they find is that the centrality of women on in Norwegian business life has changed dramatically, but there's not so big changes when it comes to, I mean, the vast majority of board members in these corporate boards serve on one to two boards, and actually the Ruth Seeley and the Cranfield people in UK find the same tendency for the FTSE boards, that most sit on a few boards, and that's almost the same pattern for difference between men and women, but a few, very few more women sit on several boards. And but what's very common when it comes to these large policy diffusion processes is that it's kind of neighboring effect first. Mainly I don't think we see that in this case. I mean, it was first Spain, which definitely is, or at least, okay, in the global context, but it's not really a neighboring country for Norway. And Iceland, I think it's kind of different. So I think we actually cannot say that there's a strong neighboring effect, because there's much more strong opposition in Sweden and Denmark against gender quotas. And as I mentioned, especially in Denmark, Sweden, in fact, had a very parallel process to the Norwegian process, but they ended up not adopting gender quotas. And I think the main reason for that was that one reason is that state ownership, it's much more important part of Norwegian business life than in Sweden, so it's kind of a capitalism explanation. Sweden is more reluctant to gender quota policies, and the gender balance increased much more rapidly in Sweden than in Norway, so they reached 25% quite fast, but now it has stabilized and even fallen a little bit, and it's a new debate emerging in Sweden, where the Minister of Gender Equality in Sweden, she is clearly very positive to gender quotas for corporate boards. Coercion is one of the mechanisms often used in diffusion theory as a reason for spread. As I see it, this is not, at least yet, very relevant in this context. But still to see whether EU will play a coercive role on the countries that do not comply. We don't know that yet, and it does not look like it. And still to see whether surveillance and sanctions will accompany national and EU legislation. And I think this is one of the important uncertainty points here. What will the countries that has not yet, I'm looking for enforced legislation yet, what will they do? Competition policies change because of changes in incentives. Countries adjust to avoid lagging behind has been a kind of competition argument. More women on boards are good for business, lends itself to a competitive rhetoric. This argument may have pushed Norway, the EU and other countries towards reforms. Still, this is, I think, more a rhetorical than a real politics argument. I think that politicians need arguments to give the groundings for their policies, but I don't think people really strongly believe that you need to have a gender balance board to have optimal economic performance of the board. But I think that on the more societal level, Norway's comparative success in finance and gender equality may be an aspect, at least moderating the analysis of the negative effects of the quota reform on economic performance. Learning. Okay, I have then 2 points concerned with causes and effects. Rather clear that imposing gender quotas positively affects the gender composition of corporate boards. Thus, the countries that strive for more women in corporate boards may choose quotas because they are the most effective. And that is what also several EU reports show, that the countries that have introduced some kind of either legislation or comply or and explain regulations, the number of women have increased faster in these countries than in the other countries. It may be disputed, but I think they have quite good statistics that shows this. And gender balance, to be good for business and good for society, is a problematic argument and showed hard to prove and thus less likely to play a role. So I think that these are two learning effects that goes in a different direction. So I'll then reach my conclusion. Surprising, I will say, international spread of a unique and nationally distinctive legislation. I think that when the Norwegian legislation at least emerged in the debate, it was really, I think, very few have thought of this as a possibility at all, and that it was later to spread around Europe. I think people were really amazed, and I think this is, we now have a conservative Progress Party government, which are basically very much against gender quotas, but I don't think they will do anything with it because of the international spread in fact, or at least partly because of it. Also because it does not, it's not an important question in the public debate. Importance of path dependency of gender quota policy tradition for the emergence and may, to some extent, have been important for the spread. And I think that it's good reason to look further into the relationship between electoral quotas and gender quotas for corporate boards. And then, inspired by your paper, discourse around gender quotas have changed spread of electoral quotas, or is has to do with the spread of electoral quotas. I mean, it's about 100 countries in the world at the moment that has some kind of electoral quotas. And these kind of quota policies and also other gender equality policies are associated with modernity and progress, and as Sukhya argues, a delegitimization of male dominance. I think there's something like that going on here. Male dominance of elites has become increasingly misrecognized. Gender quotas contributes and measures to deal with it. Because, I mean, this has been very strong problem, much discussed, what to do about male dominance of elites. But it's really hard to find good measures or good policies to do anything with it. But gender quotas, in a way, or at least make some changes.